RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome back to another edition of the MMA Report Podcast. I have got four fire interviews on this edition of the show. You're going to hear from Bellator 259 winner Danny Sabatello as he talks about his win there against Brett Johns. You'll hear about from the two men that are going to be the main event of Valor Fighting Challenge 83, fighting there for the lightweight title, Demir Ferhat Begovic and Nate Williams. Also, you're going to hear from the man that's going to be in the main event of LFA 109, Terrence McKinney, who is coming off back-to-back knockout victories in under 35 seconds. So those interviews come up on this edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, appreciate you taking time out of your day to download and listen to this episode of the show. Of course, be sure to subscribe to the MMA Report, whether you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're getting podcasts. And of course, if you do happen to check out the MMA Report on YouTube, really would appreciate if you like the video, subscribe, hit that notification bell, and all of that. But I want to get right into the interviews. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Danny Sabatello, who talked about his win against Brett Johns there at Bellator 259. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who stepped up on 5-6 days notice to get the win there at Bellator 259. Danny, appreciate the time. Obviously, I was watching your chat with the media after fighting. You know, you talked about 5-6 days notice, and obviously, you know, part of obviously the adversity you deal with is just obviously making the weight on 5-6 days notice. But what other challenges were there for you in terms of taking a fight on, you know, less than a week's notice?
You know, honestly, it was really all about that weight. You know, 5-6 days notice, it's really tough to cut all that weight inside that amount of time. And it made it even tougher because of all the quarantine protocols. You know, when I got there on Sunday, I had to quarantine in my hotel room for 24 hours. So I couldn't run outside, couldn't run on a treadmill. I just put on my sweatsuit and started jumping rope, shadow boxing. Honestly, the weight cut sucked. It was probably the worst weight cut of my life. But, you know, the good thing about it was it didn't have me overthinking the fight, overthinking certain situations, you know, getting too nervous and anything like that. It was pretty much all just focused on, let's make this fucking weight, and then we'll go from there.
How much nerves do you have typically before a fight?
I don't really have too many nerves. You know, I'm a really calm guy, especially, you know, when I get in there, I'm probably the most calm I am just in general. You know, I'm a very energetic and passionate and motivated guy. But when I go in there, I'm just cool as a cucumber, man.
As you evaluate how you performed there at Bellator 215, obviously a great performance you had, you know, start to finish, you know, with what you're able to do there. But how do you evaluate how you performed?
Yeah, I'm very happy with myself, very satisfied. I'd give myself about probably an A. You know, the only reason it wouldn't be an A+ is just because I didn't get that finish. You know, I'm always searching for the finish. I thought I would go in there and get the finish. Second round TKO is what I predicted. Didn't get it. Came close a little bit with some chokes. But yeah, overall, man, I'm not one of these robots that sits here and goes, oh, I could work on this and all that and all that. I'm really just happy, man. Anytime you can get a win inside of somewhere like Bellator, you got to be happy with yourself. So overall, I'm on top of the moon. I'm ecstatic. Very, very happy with myself.
Are you the type of athlete that doesn't overanalyze how you perform?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I'll go back and I'll watch the fight with my coaches just to, you know, see what areas we can improve on and all that. But, you know, you don't want to think too much on something because, you know, at the end of the day, this shit should be enjoyable. You know, I love fighting. This is awesome to me. That's what happened Friday was probably the most fun I've ever had in my life. You know, so I got to enjoy the process. And that's what makes me love this sport is just having fun. So I think if you're overthinking things and you're too hard on yourself, it's just like, man, what are you even doing? You know, I'll celebrate anything. I'll celebrate tomorrow when I wake up in the morning, just being alive another day. You know, I'll celebrate all the little things.
What do you remember the moment when you realized like you love this sport?
I've always loved fighting. You know, I always got in trouble growing up with fighting. I wrestled my whole life, wrestled since I was 5 years old. I always knew I was going to get into fighting once the wrestling career was done. There's not a specific time when I knew that I loved it. I just always have. It always just came natural to me. You know, it's what I live for.
Like, as you were going through your collegiate wrestling, was it like, did you know back then, like, okay, once my times in collegiate wrestling are over, that is the next step in my life?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times I would even get ahead of myself. You know, I'm in wrestling season and all that, and all of a sudden I'm already thinking about, you know, what I'm going to do when I'm fighting and researching this and that. I was very, very excited to start off my fighting career. That's my number one passion. It always has been. I've always watched fighting. But wrestling was just kind of like a clutch to have in fighting. You know, it's probably the best background to have in fighting, not just because of the technique with it and the skills, but, you know, the mindset with wrestlers is a little bit different. We're a little bit more mentally tough. And my wrestling career has helped out with this fighting stuff.
And of course, you mentioned about after it's, you're looking for a top, you know, challenger there at 135 pounds. You know, there's been all this talk about a 135 pound tournament. I mean, do you kind of, is that really the mindset of like, look, if the tournament is next, I got to be one of those guys in? I mean, is that just like the goal at this point of, I just need one of those spots?
Yeah, absolutely. I hope there is a tournament. You know, this bantamweight division, I think, is the best division in Bellator. Very, very deep. And now you got a guy like Brett Johns coming over. That's just an addition to this stuff. Yeah, a tournament would be awesome. But if not, you know, I'm always looking for the top guys. The rankings just came out, and I don't know what the fuck those people were thinking. I'm not even ranked in the top 10. Kind of disrespectful to me, but also disrespectful to Brett Johns. I mean, that guy was 17-2. He was 5-2, I believe, in the UFC, a two-fight win streak. And to not put the good thoughts on me after dominating a guy like that, especially on 6 days' notice, is just, it's disrespectful to both of us. So either way, I don't know who's going to be next. I don't think they're going to give me a top five because I'm not even in the rankings. But, you know, I'll take a lower guy like Jornell Lugo or Josh Hill or Cass Bell, you know, any one of those guys.
As a voter in the Bellator ranking system, you were in my top 10. It's funny because I think I saw someone note about it on Twitter, and I was like, hold on, I put Danny in the top 10. So I log into it, and I'm like, yeah, he's in my top 10. There are some times when I see like the kind of the reaction, because usually for me, I do it the next day. So it's all fresh in my memory. And I'm sitting there going, like, man, he just beat Brett Johns. I'm just sitting there going, I don't know how they don't put you in the top 10.
Right. I mean, it's crazy. And especially, dude, again, not even just beating a guy like Brett Johns, but dominating him. And then you look at the guys that are in those rankings, and some of those guys, you scratch your head and you're like, okay, what the hell is going on here? But you know what? It doesn't matter to me. At the end of the day, I got to go in there and I got to fight. You know, the rankings don't really mean shit. All the thing that matters is the champion, you know, right now, and that's Sergio Pettis. So he's got a target on his back. And I want that belt, but I know I'm not going to get a title shot right away, so I got to just climb these ranks. And that's why I want Jornell Lugo or Josh Hill or Cass Bell. I think those guys are like 7, 8, 9, maybe, you know, any one of those guys. Right, yeah. And I've been calling out those guys all week, but it's crickets on their end. You know, they're not answering the call, which I anticipated that. None of them are going to want to fight me. They know I'll fuck them up. But, you know, sooner or later, they're all going to have to fight me.
Is it also one of those things of like you just looked at last Friday? It's like, this was my introduction. I'm here. You know what I'm about. Was that the mentality heading into the fight of like, okay, some of these guys may not know who I am right now, but they're going to know me after these 15 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. And once my manager, Jason House, called me and said that I was going to fight Brett Johns, my eyes just lit up like it was Christmas, man. I knew that that was a huge opportunity for me, especially to get a guy like Brett Johns where I can steal his thunder, steal his hype and all that, and just kind of show that, you know what, Danny Sabatello, the Italian gangster, has arrived. You know, that's what you dream about. It couldn't have worked out any better. And now I know these bantamweights have seen that fight, and I know they're scared, because when you got a guy like me that's just talking trash all the time, typically they should be like, oh, shut this guy up, you know, he sucks, shut this loudmouth up. None of them have mentioned my name. No one's talking about me. They're all just scared right now.
I remember I was talking to James Krause. We were talking about trash talking, and James is known as a trash talker, and he goes in a fight, he goes, man, I absolutely love it when my opponent will engage in the trash talk inside of the fight. Are you the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's multiple reasons why I talk trash. You know, first and foremost, I love it. I just like talking trash. I've always been that way. I'll talk trash playing pool or ping pong. It doesn't matter to me. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, a lot with this sport is mental warfare. So much mentality goes into this sport. And a lot of guys can't take the trash talk. You know, it's more pressure on the situation. It's more eyeballs on the situation. So when you talk trash to a guy, a lot of times you can get in his head. And I think I did get into Brett Johns' head when I was talking trash to him a little bit. And that's just the way it goes, man. Mental warfare, there needs to be more talk about it because it's huge.
Is the mindset now of just stay ready in case something, you know, what maybe a guy falls out of fire or maybe there's an opportunity just comes your way. Is that the mindset?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always ready, man. I don't believe in training camps. These pussy ass fighters talk about training camps, 6 week, 8 week training camp, man. I am in the gym every single day, twice a day, no matter what. You know, obviously when you got an opponent, you kind of tailor a couple ideas towards their game and all that, but I'm always in the gym and I'm always ready. But the good thing about my fighting style is I don't really take too much damage. You know, in that fight, I didn't get hurt at all. No scrapes, nothing. So I get to fight again ASAP right away. You know, if it's up to me, I'll fight tonight. It doesn't matter. But I'm hoping for August, again, Jornell Lugo or Josh Hill or Cass Bell, whatever his name is. August, one of those guys. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah, that was one of the things when I was watching your chat with the media after. I was like, if someone just saw the video of that, they probably would have thought you did not fight that night like you were the coach.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. But that's just the way I fight. And a lot of people don't even like the way I fight, but they don't understand it, man. I'm in this to be a long fighter. I want to fight probably until I'm 40. And the good thing is I don't take damage in my fights and I fight smart. I fight good. I keep winning. You'll see me after a fight and you'll be like, oh my God, I thought that guy just went for a run. That's it. That's how I fight. I don't take damage and I inflict the most damage there is.
Now, do you allow, you know, I mean, you mentioned about like, look, this is 24/7 me, you know, training, getting ready for fights, but did you allow yourself a day or two to kind of, you know, celebrate and maybe have a cheat meal, a cheat drink, that type of thing?
Oh no, absolutely. In terms of diet, you know, it's no secret. I like to party a lot. So I've been partying since I got my hand raised. You know, I was slamming shots back in the casino right afterwards. So I do like to party, you know, but that's what I was going back to what I was saying with the no hobbies. You know, I don't really fish or hunt or do anything like that. All I do is I fight and I enjoy myself, you know, but I definitely like to enjoy myself. I'm going to go back to Chicago here in a couple of days and hang out with some friends and have fun with them. But I'm still going to be training when I'm back in Chicago. You know, there's a few gyms that I go to and I'm going to still get after it over there.
All right. So you're walking up to the bar to celebrate. What's the victory shot?
Vodka.
Okay.
I've always been a vodka guy. Just shots of vodka. That's just how I am. You know, my parents, you know, they're always trying to get me to drink red wine and, you know, or my friends are always like pounding beers and I love vodka. It's just how I am.
Now, like, is it a specific brand of vodka? Like, it has to be this brand all the time?
No, I'm not too picky. My go-to is usually Tito's, though. I think it's just so smooth. But New Amsterdam, there's good flavors with them. Just any vodka, pour it, and I'll pound it.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Great. Congratulations on the victory, Danny. Of course, let me know that you can follow you on social media. And, of course, anything else you want to mention, man?
Nope. I'm just coming for that motherfucking belt, and they all better be ready.
And there you have my conversation with Danny Sabatella. Appreciate him taking some time out of his day to talk to me about his win there against Brett Johns and, you know, a little talk about the Bellator rankings. Yeah, I will tell you, I was surprised to see that he was not ranked in the top 10, which, you know, that bantamweight division, it was, for me, it was a little tough. You know, where do you put Darren Caldwell? I did put Darren Caldwell in my top 10 just because of what he has been able to accomplish throughout his years in Bellator. But Danny Sabatella was definitely one of the guys that was in my top 10 and definitely a guy that if they are going to go with the bantamweight tournament, you know, he's got to be in there. I was thinking about this the other day. You know, I wonder if Bellator, because, you know, people have mentioned about, could they do a 16-man tournament? I think it's a little too much, but I do wonder, like, could Bellator say we're going to do a typical 8-man field, but the last two spots are fight-in fights? You know, maybe separate yourself. You know, maybe, you know, you have four guys compete for those final two spots. Maybe that's something they could do, but I do appreciate Danny Sabatello coming on this edition of the MMA Report podcast. Up next, you're going to hear from the two men that are going to be the main event of Valor Fighting Challenge 83, which is coming up this week there in Tennessee. Up first, you're going to hear from Demir Ferhat-Begovic, who, of course, will be taking on Nate Williams here. Lightweight title is on the line. Of course, Demir, coming in as the champion here. So here's my conversation with Demir Ferhat-Begovic. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who's going to get back inside competition here, Valor Fighting Challenge number 83, as he'll be a part of the main event fighting for the lightweight title here. Demir, appreciate time, of course, taking on Nate Williams here. But I guess the first part of this story for you is just what has been going on, man, since we saw you there at the beginning of 2020?
Nothing much, man. I've been kind of keeping down low. I haven't been really finding much luck in finding fights. So I'm just glad someone was able to take me up on a fight. So glad to be back in there.
In terms of not having luck finding fights, obviously we know what the last year has been like in terms of, regional mixed martial arts action, but also has it been a problem? You just feel like people may not want to sign on the dotted line to compete against you?
I think it's a little bit of both. Obviously, COVID's been, messing with a lot of organizations, a lot of fights, a lot of athletic events and stuff like that. But, I think with my last fight, I think I proved a point where I am in this game right now. I think there have been a few people that have turned down fights for me. Like I said, I think it's a little bit of both. I think people don't want to, take a high-risk fight. And I think it's a little bit of the COVID situation as well.
Do you take that as a compliment, or does it piss you off when fights don't come together for you?
I mean, it's whatever. It's their decision. It's not mine. I can't force them to fight me. This sport is a game. You got to look out for yourself first and foremost. If you think you're not going to get a good result in your fight, I mean, there's no reason to take it. So, like I said, just look out for you for yourself.
When I talked to your opponent here earlier in the show, the one thing that he made known, he goes, Demir, you better be ready to fight because I'm coming at you. Nate does not necessarily believe in the feeling out process. Do you like that kind of opponent that you just know that in a way of going, look, I know this guy's going to come at me. I mean, that Valor cage is not a very big cage anyway, but is that kind of like, you're like, man, I love that.
I love it. I mean, I can adjust on the fly if he wants to come out and, ready to go immediately. I'll be ready for that. I've been out here in Arizona training. So we've had a lot of different looks. We have guys that, take their time. We have guys that come out swinging hard the first minute, first, 2 minutes. But whatever he wants to do, I'll be ready for it.
What went into the decision to start training in Arizona?
I've been out here actually a couple times. I know me and Nate are both in that little spot where we can move on to the next big thing. I just wanted to make sure that I'm 100% coming into the fight, and Arizona's the way to do that.
Was that a tough decision to leave Tennessee?
No, I'll be back. I've been doing this a couple of times now. Anytime I have a big fight, I'll come out here and do my camp, and I'll go back and, go back to my home gym in Tennessee and train there. Like I said, I just wanted to be 100%. And out here, train with like top level guys. You got D1 wrestlers, boxing guys, kickboxing guys, jiu-jitsu black belts. I knew that it was the right decision for me to come out here and get ready for it.
Since we haven't seen you since February of 2020, what is the difference we can expect to see when you step into the cage on the 4th?
Over this last year, pretty much, yeah. The last time I fought was February, April of last year. I've just been training, man. I've just been looking to get back in the cage. I'm excited that someone, stepped up to the plate.
What have you missed the most about fight night?
I don't know. I think the victory afterwards. I think that's the best. I know I'm going to win this fight for sure. I'm not doubting myself at all. Once you get that hand raised and the relief of, 6 weeks of fight camp, all the nerves and, all the dieting, the weight cuttings, it's all over. I think that's the best part, is that relief after the fight.
So is that victory ritual more about what good food are you about to go have?
Yeah, I'm already thinking of, I'm already planning after the weight cut and the fight. I already got a couple spots lined up for my victory meals.
Is there a certain type of food you always go towards after the fight's over?
There's a few spots in Knoxville that, you know, a little Brazilian steakhouse is usually my go-to victory. And I'm a big carnivore, so endless meats and all that stuff is what I like.
I'll tell you, so last time I was in Knoxville for a Valor event, so it's like probably like two and a half years ago, I found like this chicken and waffle place. And I love chicken and waffles. And I was like, I saw it on the menu, so I'm like, oh, I got to get it. I forget what the place was called, but it was really good.
Yeah, there's a few spots. Nashville Hot Chicken and Waffles is usually my go-to as well. But there's a few spots in Knoxville with food like that. But yeah, like I said, I'm a big meat guy. So, you know, I think that little Brazilian steakhouse is going to be my first go-to.
Like, you talk about the hardcore diet. I mean, how hardcore is it?
Right now I'm dialing it back a little bit. Dialing training back a little bit. I'm on my last two hard days, if you want to say. I'm just kind of, you know, watching what I'm eating. I mean, I'm still eating good. I'm doing good on weight, so I'm not like, you know, starving myself. Still eating good greens, good veggies, fruits and all that stuff. But yeah, like I said, it's not too strict right now, just because I did it the right way.
And because of, you know, what you've accomplished to this point in your career, and, you know, even Nate talked about it, he's like, you look at Demir's record, this is a guy who fights whoever's going to step up to the table. You know, obviously you fought some notable names, you know, that have gone on to the UFC. Is your mindset that you believe that a win here puts you either, you know, potentially to getting that offer or maybe, or do you kind of feel like you got to put together a couple wins?
Yeah. So like I said, me and Nate are both in that little spot. I know he has like 18 pro fights. He's 12-6. Lots of good fighters he's faced as well, and so have I. I mean, I'm 4-2, 4-2-1. But you know, if you look at my last opponents, two of them are in the UFC. Both my losses, they're both guys in the UFC. And if you look at the fights, you know, I can hang with the best. So I know if I do this fight, win it, maybe do one more, and then look at a possible contender series in the fall.
When you look at whether it's JSP, Luis Pena, David Robbins, are any of those fights something that, in a way, is kind of on the target list to run them back at some point?
Yeah, I've told my coach many times I want that Luis Pena fight back. Once I get in the UFC, that's one of my first missions, to get that fight back.
Is there a reason why that one is above all else?
I just want to prove to myself. I had a bad weight cut that fight. I'm not trying to make any excuses, yeah. But I had a bad weight cut. Wasn't training like I should have been. And I know if I do everything right throughout camp, I know I can beat him. And that's just kind of, I just want to prove to myself.
Was that the biggest learning lesson you've taken so far in this sport from that fight?
Absolutely. I think that was my first professional loss. I think I got a little too comfortable. I think I was going in that fight 3-0. You know, you're undefeated, you're feeling on top of the world, no one can stop you. And I got a little complacent on training and the dieting and the weight cutting and all that. I just want to prove to myself mostly that if I do it right, that I can beat him.
And of course, everyone's going to see you fight here for the title. Valor Fighting Challenge number 83, June the 4th against Nate Williams Demir. Appreciate it, Tom. Of course, let everyone know anything fight on social media and anybody else you want to thank, man.
I just want to thank everyone at the MMA Lab, you know, my main training for this camp, everyone back home at Shield Systems, all my friends and family. I'm going to have a big crowd supporting me while I'm fighting, and I'm really just excited to put on a show for everyone.
And there was my conversation with Demir Ferhat Begovic. I appreciate him taking some time out of his day to talk to me about his preparations here for his title defense here at Valor Fighting Challenge 83. Of course, he's going to be taking on Nathaniel Williams, who is my next guest, as I spoke to Nate about this matchup, how it all came together, and how he's hoping this fight does propel him to a potential UFC offer. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is one of the men that's going to be fighting for the Valor lightweight title here, Valor FC 83. Nate, man, as always, man, appreciate the time, man. Are we just calling this championship season? Is that the way we're describing this?
Yeah, this draft season. It's time. I kind of feel like Tim kind of owed me this one because he had a 45 tournament about 2 years ago, and I won the semifinals match for the tournament and was due to fight Jacob Kilburn for the Valor 45 belt. But then, you know, Jacob got the call to the UFC, and then a few things happened here, happened there, and it kind of fell by the wayside. So now, you know, I'm back on a good win streak, three-fight win streak right now, trying to get the call to the UFC, hopefully after this one. So it's perfect timing.
What was that, one of the things that maybe you and your manager have been hitting up Tim and saying, Tim, you owe us, man, you owe us?
Not really. I mean, I message Tim every now and then and just say, hey, you know, don't forget about me. But then when a title opportunity came up, I was like, oh, yeah, Tim, don't forget about your boy. Hey, remember what we had going on in the past. So and Tim's a good guy, man. Tim, you know, he gave me the shot, gave me the opportunity, and I appreciate it. And I'm going to make the most of it.
I was looking at your Instagram. I saw that you were recently out at Jackson Wink. So what kind of how did that come about?
I got a buddy who used to train with us at X3 in Atlanta. His name's Rakim Thorpe. He just felt like he wanted to take fighting to the next level. And he moved down there and was staying in the dorm rooms down there. So he moved down there to become a full-time fighter, like nothing else but focus on fighting. So he's been down there for like a year or two, and I was just like, hey, I got some free time from the department. I had a little vacation, and I was like, hey, let me take advantage of this. Let me go down here and just – we have great things that we do at my gym, but, you know, it's always good to get a different look and to not necessarily that my confidence was low or I needed a confidence booster, but going with some different looks, some higher-level names, some higher-level, quote, air quotes, some higher-level guys – and getting a different look on things just was a good perspective change. And just from being down there, like I said, if I needed a confidence booster, it definitely was one. Definitely showed me that a lot of things that we're doing at my gym that they call i.e. a small gym, that we're doing really well, is really on par with what they're doing at the big gyms. And just the competition level, I was sticking right with, if not exceeding above some of the higher level guys that consider higher level, bigger name guys out there. So it just made me feel like I'm right on track where I need to be. Like I said, this is championship season year. This is definitely my year. Winning this belt next weekend, and then we're getting that call to the UFC.
You know, obviously, I've heard other fighters talk about this when they go cross-train our gym, that sometimes they'll look at it and say, you know what, hey, we're doing a lot of great things in my gym, but, man, there's something I saw at that gym. I'm like, I want to integrate that into what I do in my home gym. Was there something that you saw at Jack's Wink you said, I need to bring this back to Atlanta?
Yeah, kind of, not really. They're big on front kicks and utilizing their legs as almost like jabs to stagnate that front leg to leave it in place, you know, the front step inside kick or the front push kick, but mainly towards the legs. They're great at utilizing that as a tool, tool of range finding. So I was able to pick that up just a little bit, but I mean, like I said, most of the stuff that we do at my gym was kind of on par with the things they were already teaching. So it wasn't like I was learning anything new per se. We were just kind of just like critiquing kind of the stuff we already knew.
You know, when you mentioned about the front kick, one of the things that immediately comes to my mind, and we've seen a lot of Jack's Wink fighters implement this, is the calf kick. And yeah. I've had other guys say, like, it is such a devastating technique if you land it in the right spot. Like, is it one of those things with, do you have a memory of, maybe it's in a fight where you got hit with a calf kick and you're like, oh man.
No, calf kicks usually, they haven't been thrown as much, I guess because of, until the popular craze, but usually if somebody kicks me, they usually kick me in that nice meaty part of the thigh. And I really appreciate everybody that's kicking me there instead of i.e. the calf. So I really haven't had a calf kick trouble yet. Not knock on some wood here, because we don't want that to happen next weekend. But calf kicks haven't really been a problem for me, luckily. I don't know if my footwork or I'm pretty decent at checking kicks, so I kind of can see them coming. But usually when they do land, they usually land in the meaty part of the thigh. So
I've had this conversation with a couple of other fighters where we've talked about body shots being maybe the most underutilized technique in mixed martial arts. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. Body shots are one of those things that people, if you're not used to doing them, you kind of want them to work all of a sudden. It's like people want to hit somebody once or twice with the body and expect them to fall, like we see in a lot of high-level UFC fights. But body is like the bank. You're putting that time in for later. You're putting you're putting literally money in the bank. I'm hitting them. I'm hitting them in the body. I'm wearing down the cardio. So maybe in the second, third, fourth, or fifth rounds, these body shots will take toll on them versus just hitting them once or twice in the first two rounds and expecting them to fall. But yeah, body shots are underutilized. And I think because of that, and the reason why is because, like I said, people expect for them to be like a face shot. You may hit somebody in the eye one time and you see some residual from that. You may see some swelling, maybe a cut or a black eye or something like that. But body shots, not all necessarily. You may hit somebody clean, and because they have a good poker face, you may thought that the body shot was worthless, so you don't go back to it. You know, so I think that may be a reason why.
Your opponent here, Demir Farhadbegovic, he's, I think the thing that, and I've known about Demir for a couple of years now, but the thing that always sticks out to you is he's fought high-level competition. You know, you look at his two losses, they're both against two guys who are currently in the UFC. As you evaluated him, what's kind of your take on it?
Demir's tough, man. Even though he only has six fights, the amount of fights he has, like you said, does not account for the experience that he has gained through the level of competition he's fought. Because, like we know, he's fought Luis Pena, he's fought Jonathan St. Pierce, and both of those were his only two losses, but those guys are in the UFC. So he's lost to literally only UFC caliber fighters, you know. So he's tough. He's scrappy. He's the kind of guy that's looking to fight. He's looking to bring the fight. He's going to counter back. He's going to throw hard. But at this level, they all throw hard. Everybody's looking to land that hard shot, looking to deter you from coming forward with some solid strikes. But I mean, I got 18 professional fights. So I mean, not to take away from his game, but there's nothing he can throw at me that I have not seen before.
It's been a while since we've seen him in there against that technical draw against David Robbins. Like, does it become tough to evaluate him as a fighter when, you know, it's his first fight in a year and a half?
When I watch his fights, I kind of get an idea, but I always assume that he's going to be better than what I'm watching. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I always prepare to fight the best Demir. I'm preparing to fight the best Demir possible, that maybe some things that I do see that he's made a mistake on in the past, I'm assuming that he's corrected those mistakes. I'm assuming that he's coming out here, you know, little mistakes as possible, trying to have a flawless game as he can. So, and with that mindset, I'm prepared to fight a flawless fight just to beat him at his best. I'm coming out there to be my best, to beat him at his best.
Do you think it's going to lead to maybe a little bit of a longer feeling out process, just so, you know, kind of maybe see if he shows you something in that first 15, 20 seconds that maybe you haven't seen on film?
I don't know if you've watched too many of my fights before. I don't really have a feeling out process. my coach is in the last couple fights, he's tried to like scale me back and like, hey, come out and move around for the first few seconds. But I got the Conor McGregor approach, and I'm not saying I'm doing it because Conor McGregor does it, but it kind of makes sense when you think of his philosophy behind it. So, like, and I hope he watches this, because Demir, when the bell rings, be ready to fight as soon as the bell rings. Don't think we're going to come out and circle and do all this. Be ready to fight as soon as the bell rings. And I like to come out with that approach because I like to put him on defense immediately, get him stepping back. And if, when Conor said it, you come out and attack immediately, you get your opponent is now, the first thing they think is defensive mindset. They're thinking defense. They're stepping back and they're thinking, oh snap, what do I have to watch out for? He's throwing something at me. Let me defend first. You know what I'm saying? So it already gets them, I don't want to call it the retreating mindset, but it already kind of gets them on the second guessing. So now if he's worried about what I'm doing, I've already have the upper hand versus me worrying about what he's about to do.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of made me think about it. It's just like, if you're the opposing fighter, does it, in a way, can it allow you to kind of forget of what you were trying to accomplish in that first minute?
Yeah. So, like I said, I I know what my game plan is. I'm coming out there and I'm getting in his face. I mean, the cage ain't but so big. So if you take two steps back in this cage, we're already on the wall anyway. So, I mean, it's going to be about who wants to get out there, who wants to control the center of the cage, and who wants to establish their dominance.
I've been at a Valor event. That is not a very big cage. Yeah, you take about two steps. You're at the cage.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, and that's part of the preparation as well. I mean, you know, I've fought in their larger cages that are similar to the UFC style, where you can take four or five steps back and kind of circle out before you hit the cage. But then in this one, I've also fought in smaller cages where two, three steps and you on that borderline, you know. So it's going to be about more lateral movement. Coming forward, a lateral movement. If I'm backing up, I'm giving him opportunities. But if I'm coming forward, then I feel like I'm, you know, giving myself the best chance to success.
Would you say you prefer to fight in the smaller cage?
No. I don't really care. Now that I think about it. I think I just sound cool. I don't care. My style, I'm a grappling-based style anyway. That I just kind of adopted striking over the years, and I've gotten real comfortable striking over the years just because of grappling, how confident I am in grappling. But with a grappling-based style, I'd rather you be close to me anyway, because I don't want to have to chase you to try to take you down anyway. So if we're closer together, that just eliminates spaces that I have to – distance that I have to close anyway. That makes it easier for me. So, I think I might like the smaller intimate cage.
Of course, we get to see it here come up here on June the 4th. Valor Fighting Challenge number 83, Nate. Appreciate time. Of course, let me know anything for you on social media. Anything else you want to mention, man?
Get the tickets, fella. People, get the tickets. Get the stream. I promise you, if you've seen me fighting Valor Cage before, it's fireworks. I'm 2-0 in the Valor Cage. Two first-round finishes. I haven't fought more than 5 minutes in a Valor Cage yet. And I just plan on to keep that cycle going. This is my time. Like I said, I've said it a couple times already in this interview. The last two guys that have beaten him have gotten to the UFC, so I'm looking to make it a third. Demir is very tough, very seasoned, very game opponent, so I'm honored to get this opportunity. I'm not taking him lightly at all, but I'm coming. It's levels, and I'm coming. I'm coming, so I plan on getting him. He can have the belt after I beat it, after I take it from him and I relinquish it and I go to the UFC, then it's his. He can have it. But it's my time now. So.
And that was my conversation with Nate Williams. I appreciate him coming on the podcast to talk about his fight coming up here this week for the Valor lightweight title. Great story there as he talked about Tim Loy, the matchmaker there of Valor, owing him a title matchup. And, of course, he gets it here against Demir Ferhat Begovic. Also, this fight card's also going to see a lightweight matchup between Nick Gertz and Peter Pettis. Both those interviews will be on the MMA Report YouTube channel, so be on the lookout for that as Peter Pettis moving up to 155 pounds. He told me that his days of going down to 145 pounds are over. On the other side, Nick Gertz, he is a 45er, but it's about taking the opportunity here. So be on the lookout for those over on the MMA Report YouTube channel. Now, the final conversation you're going to hear on this edition of the podcast is going to be with Terrence McKinney, who is coming off wins in 17 seconds and 16 seconds, being the main event of LFA 109, as he'll be taking on Michael Izari Ortiz, who actually I'm going to be talking to next week as well. That'll be on the MMA Report YouTube channel. So here's my conversation with Terrence McKinney. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is one of the men that's going to be in the main event of LFA 109. Of course, you can watch it live on UFC Fight Pass. And this is a man who has needed, 33 seconds in his last two fights to walk away with two victories. And they both have something very much in common, that left head kick. So is it going into both those fights? Was that a technique that you thought was going to be there?
Honestly, I just know it's going to land, honestly. It's like I literally land a head kick literally like on everyone at practice, like all the time.
And people can, see the one from 2 weeks ago over on YouTube, of course, and then, of course, they can see the one on LFA. The one on LFA was kind of like, it was, I guess, I don't know if you want to say grazing shot, but just kind of the way your opponent reacted to it. So once he kind of falls down, was your mindset of like, okay, I got to go for the kill, I've got him?
No, I felt it connect. A lot of people don't know, but I broke my toe before this fight, so like... my balance was all off, like, once I landed the kick, so, but, yeah, like, my shin was, like, hurting for, like, a couple of days after. I knew it connected. I was like, oh, damn.
So, in terms of the broken toe, how long did it take for you to get over it?
Honestly, it hurt, like, the whole fight camp. Like, with toe stuff, like, there's not really much you can do. Like, I literally, like, I just didn't really kick till, like, the fight, like, when my adrenaline was working.
But of course, you're right back in there. 2 months later, you're back in it. So was it just one of those things of, hey, man, you know, line them up, I'm knock them down? Is that the mentality you had to your manager?
Yeah, like right now, just trying to show the UFC that I'm like really about it. So like, if I'm not injured, I'm gonna try to fight every month till I get signed to the UFC. I just want to show them like I really love this. I'm not like one of them guys just cherry picking, waiting. I'm fighting. That's what I love to do.
Do you remember the moment you realized you loved this?
I fell in love with it, I think, right after I did, like, my first cage fight, like, okay. 2017.
So, before you got into this, like, was martial arts, like, on the mindset of being a professional fighter?
Honestly, no. Like, my assistant coach, Mike Kessler, won, like, the Ultimate Fighter show, and then I was like, and I saw, like, all the emotions he's had, and I was like, I want to have that feeling because, like, mm-hmm. I love competing. And, like, at first, like, I sucked really bad at wrestling. And then one time I helped the team win a duel against this school, Century Valley, where I'm from. And we haven't beat them in, like, 20 years. And like, I was losing bad. And, like, 5 seconds left, I pinned the kid. And, like, that feeling was, like, amazing. I was addicted. And, like, that's kind of, like, what happened with fighting.
Can you describe that feeling? To, you know, just that common fan that, you know, it's a Saturday night, they're on their couch, they're watching the UFC, they're watching Bellator or whatever promotion it may be, of what that feeling is like for you on fight night.
I would say it's like, you know, you're watching UFC main event and your guy just goes out there and obliterate your opponent and you just you go crazy with your boys. Like, that's like the best way I can describe it, you know. It's awesome.
Now, when you look at this main event here at LFA, as you evaluated your opponent's abilities, Michael, what's your overall take on him?
I didn't watch too much of him, but I can tell he's a hard worker and he looks like a humble dude. And, you know, but really, I just trust in God and I trust in my abilities, you know. Like, that's only one thing I'm looking to do, and that's win. Like, I'm just trying to get one step closer to UFC, like. So, really, it's like he's just in my path. So, like, I respect all my opponents, but I know what I got to do. I'm ready to do it.
Do you typically not watch a lot of film on your opponent?
I watch, like, one video, and then, like, you know, it's hard to watch people fight because, like, in a fight, like, anything can happen. You can't just, like, this dude's going to fight the same. Like, he might change up his whole game based upon me. So, like, I just really like to just go off the field.
Do you go back and watch more of your own fights than you do your actual opponent?
I like to watch my fights, of course, more than my opponents. Who doesn't, you know? Everyone likes watching themselves, like, do work.
Is part of that also just the self-evaluation? You know, like, you know, I think anyone who's played any type of sports, you know, they had that coach that, you know, they pull up your film and they're like, oh, you know, you should have gone left, not right. You know, is that one of those things that you're more looking at it and saying, okay, what could I have done better?
Yeah, I always critique myself. And I like, same with my opponents. Like, I only watch one video and I'm very, like, detail orientated. So like when I watch my opponent's fight, I know what's going to work and what setup's going to get the job done.
So how do you see the job getting done here at LFA?
Honestly, I'm looking to knock him out, to be honest.
Because of that left head kick, do you kind of feel like he is going to be anticipating that and that ultimately will open up other things?
Yes, I honestly think he's going to be expecting a kick, but I'm really looking to show my hands this time. I just want to show people that I'm dangerous in every aspect of the game, whether that's we're exchanging punches or throwing head kicks or if it touched the ground. Everyone knows I'm a college wrestler, so I'm just looking to let it fly this year because, like, what do I have to lose? Someone takes me down. Like, I've been wrestling pretty much since high school.
You mentioned about it's about lining them up, knocking them down, showing the UFC what you can do. Do you think that this is the fight that gets you that offer you're looking for?
I think this fight gets it done. This guy has a very good record, and, you know, he's 12-3. So, like, if I can get a dominating finish, the UFC they know what to do.
Of course, everyone's will see your fight here live on UFC Fight Pass. Come up here, main event, LFA 109, June the 4th. Terrence, appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know they can follow you on social media. Anything else you want to mention, man?
I just want to say, I want to give a shout out to God for whatever's about to come this next weekend. All glory to Him.
And that was my conversation with Terrence McKinney. I appreciate him taking some time out of his day to talk to me about his matchup here at LFA 109 on Friday night, June the 4th. As I mentioned, I will be talking to his opponent here. Look for that interview on the MMA Report podcast. I'm actually recording this podcast here on Friday afternoon. Of course, this podcast comes out on May the 30th, as I'm actually taking the weekend off, a rare weekend off for me. Really doesn't happen too often. So, of course, in this crazy mixed martial arts world, there's not too many opportunities you get where you have no Bellator, no UFC. So taking the weekend off. So hopefully you're having a great Memorial Day weekend if you're listening to this on Sunday or Monday, or if you're listening to this like Tuesday or Wednesday, hopefully you had a great Memorial Day weekend. You know, one of the things I did want to touch on before I get out of here on this edition of the podcast is the return of the Ultimate Fighter is debuting on Tuesday on ESPN+. And of course, you've followed any of the UFC social channels, you've seen all the promotion. I believe the official hashtag is Return of TUF. And the Ultimate Fighter is not a show that I've really been engaged with for multiple years. I've talked about this in the past. The last time, like, I actively watched a season of the Ultimate Fighter was the year that it was the ATT Black Zillion season. I just haven't really watched it since then. I want to watch. If you just gave me a way just to watch the fights, I really don't care for the reality aspect of the Ultimate Fighter, but I'm going to check the show out on Tuesday. I'll check it out and see if it's going to keep me something entertained. But overall, I just, you know, and usually it happens every year with the Ultimate Fighter, when the Ultimate Fighter was happening two times a year, where, you know, I'd check out the first couple episodes, but then more times than not, I would just kind of not really pay full attention outside of just going back and watching the actual fight. So it'd be interesting to kind of see, under the ESPN umbrella, can Tough kind of rebrand and get people interested again. It's just been a long time for me since I've truly been interested in what I've seen out of the UFC in terms of the Ultimate Fighter, which I've talked about it. I really prefer a more the contender series route. I like the way that goes, and those are fights I do enjoy. Of course, contender series will come back, I want to say August, maybe July, August, somewhere there. I know it's running in September. I know Nolan King had a tweet the other day that this is more going to have a international feel this year, and Nolan bringing up the point of, you know, obviously with you look at what's happened over, you know, the last year, of there really just hasn't been a lot of opportunities for international fighters. So that's going to be something that we are going to see. So I'll be paying attention on Tuesday. Of course, the next episode of the podcast will come out on Wednesday. Myself and Daniel Galvan, we will get you ready for next week's UFC fight card. It's going to be headlined by Rozenstruik and Sakai, heavyweight matchup there. Of course, that's a fight card that I looked at the other day, and it wasn't exactly a fight card that I was like, oh man, I can't wait for that one. I mean, it didn't have, there were a couple of fights on there that did stick out to me. Look, it's a notable heavyweight matchup between Rozenstruik and Augusto Sakai. Walt Harris taking on Marcin Tybura is a part of that card. The one fight that I would tell you that I'm really looking forward to that card, Miguel Baeza and Santiago Ponzinibbio. That is a fight card. That's a fight on that card that I am really intrigued by. So, of course, myself and Daniel, we will preview that fight card coming up on Wednesday's episode of the podcast. Of course, if there's anything you do want to hear us discuss, you can shoot us a tweet. If you want to slide into my Instagram DMs, you can do that. Of course, handle is @Jason_Floyd, both on Instagram and on Twitter. So that is going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out 2 times a week on Sundays and Wednesdays on your favorite podcasting platform and RadioInfluence.com.